I do have to clarify that I only have a master's, but I do want to introduce Dr. Ecken, who's in the audience too, who worked on this project. And we appreciate this opportunity to present the American Joint Replacement Registry Level 2 pilot results. I have no relationships to disclose. First, I want to give some background why the American Joint Replacement Registry was developed and who we are. Total hip and knee replacements are one of the most common procedures performed in the United States, with approximately 470,000 total hip replacements and a little over 700,000 knee replacements performed annually. Additionally, estimates from a 2007 study predict that by 2030, demand for primary total hip replacements will grow 174% to 572,000 per year, while primary total knee will grow to 673% to 3.5 million procedures per year. Furthermore, based on the healthcare cost and utilization project's national inpatient sample, the U.S. national aggregate cost are $28 billion for total knees or total hips and $39 billion for total knee replacements. Total knee replacements are so common because they offer quality improvement of life for people with knee osteoarthritis or hip osteoarthritis, which is the most common diagnosis for total joint replacements. Despite the benefits of total joint replacements procedures, there are some risks for poor outcomes. Factors as seen on this slide are related to implant longevity and or early revision, and therefore need to be better understood and monitored to improve patient care. For example, the AJRR's goal is to develop implant survivorship curves to be able to identify poorly performing implants. The Australian and UK registries identified in 2010 that metal-on-metal hip implants had a higher than expected revision rate, leading to a massive recall and affecting nearly 100,000 patients worldwide. As the country that conducts the most total joint replacements, a U.S. registry may be able to identify these types of issues sooner. Additionally, as healthcare landscape is changing from fee-for-service to a value-based reimbursement of care, providers and payers are looking for national performance metrics to compare outcomes and promote quality improvement initiatives. For instance, CMS is utilizing qualified clinical data registries like AJRR to submit data for eligible professionals for the Physician Quality Reporting System, PQRS, and while hospitals participating in CMS's Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement, CCJR, a bundle payment model, they are seeking to identify metrics to benchmark against. I also would like to mention that the FDA has the MD EpiNet program, which is the Medical Device Epidemiology Network. It is a private practice partnership working to integrate real-world data into an infrastructure to improve patient-centered outcomes for medical devices around the world. As part of this mission, the FDA has sponsored International Consortium of Orthopedic Registries to foster inter-registry collaboration and to address gaps in evidence and data related to medical implants by harmonizing data. With all these influences, the AJRR was incorporated in 2010 by the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. We are a not-for-profit, multi-stakeholder initiative dedicated to improving patient care. Our goal is to capture 90% of all total hip and knees procedures that are completed in the United States in the effort to enhance patient safety, improve quality of care, and reduce the cost of care as well. As a national registry, AJRR is not only supported by orthopedic specialty organizations such as the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, the American Association of Hip and Knee Surgeons, the Hip Society, the Knee Society, but also supported by hospital participants, commercial health plans, industry, and the following groups shown on this screen. As you can see here, we have participating hospitals in all 50 states. The states in dark red have at least 25 hospitals that are currently participating in the registry. In addition to our extensive geographic coverage, we also have a wide variety of sites participating, including small, large, profit, and nonprofit hospitals, academic medical centers, multiple health system and networks, ambulatory surgery centers, private practice groups, and solo practitioners. AGR started enrolling hospitals in 2011. This chart shows the growth in hospital participants since 2012. Since submitting the slide, AGRR now has 584 hospitals participating. And this particular slide also focuses on procedures. And as of now, in an update on this slide, again, we have over 350 procedures in the database for analysis. Our upcoming annual report, which will be coming out this week at AUKUS, will consist of 211 procedures from 236 hospitals. We continue to grow each year and get closer to reaching our goal of capturing 90% of all total hip procedures done in the United States. AGRR has identified four level of data elements that it wishes to collect. We are currently collecting only level one data, which is regarding, it's on the left here, patient, hospital, surgeon procedures. And for the procedural information, we are collecting catalog and lot numbers of the implants. This information will allow AJRR to develop implant survivorship curves to identify poorly performing implants. At the beginning of next year, level two and level three will be collected. Level two data in the yellow box here will allow AJRR to risk adjust the data based on additional clinical and procedural information such as preoperative assessment, patient risk factors, comorbidities, and we have hospitals report this using ICD-9 codes. And also complications, length of stay, ASA scores, the American Society of Anesthesiology score. Level three data is patient reported outcomes, and level four data is radiographic images. Data submission is straightforward for participants. As you saw in an earlier slide, AGRR participants are predominantly hospitals, and since the majority of the total joint replacements are inpatient procedures. Hence, AGRR's level one data is captured in the hospital electronic health records. And AGRR intentionally focuses on data elements that are consistently captured across different hospitals and EHRs. So to reduce submission burden, AGRR has hospitals load up electronic CSV or Excel files of the data elements queried from their EHR to a secure SFTP server. And it allows one-time report effort for the hospital, one-time effort to refine the data, and can be automated. Hospitals do have the option to submit data manually. However, 99% of our participants submit electronically. Our goal for the pilot was to see if AGRR would be able to collect level two data. In 2014, AGRR implemented a pilot study to evaluate U.S. hospitals and physician practice groups' capabilities and barriers to submit data beyond basic level one data. The pilot was not intended to address any particular hypothesis or enable us to do any complex analysis on the data collected, but only assess what data elements could be easily collected on a national level. This slide shows the full list of elements for the pilot. Level two data elements were identified as variables associated with total joint replacement outcomes and therefore would be appropriate to include in risk adjustment models. Hospitals received data specification files covering 41 new data elements regarding additional patient and procedural information, selected lab values, patient comorbidities, infections and thrombolysis prophylaxis, the American Society of ASA scores, and surgical complications, post and preoperative. In late 2013, AGRR solicited volunteers of a pool of participating hospitals. At that time, it was 220 hospitals. Hospitals were asked to submit level two data elements where possible and participate in structured interview sessions to provide feedback regarding level two data acquisition. 23 hospitals expressed interest participating, including multi-hospital systems. Our overall results are on a sample of 20 hospitals that submitted data on approximately 8,000 total hip and knee procedures, which included preoperative data. As a reminder, preoperative data was looking at patient and procedural information, comorbidities, lab values, and ASA scores. All hospitals were able to extract and report data on patient comorbidities and ASA scores. However, there was some wide variability in reporting due to checking yes or no for presence of comorbidity instead of submitting ICD-9 codes. And of the 20 hospitals, only 14 hospitals submitted data on about 1,500 procedures that included post-op complications. So our results, preoperative data regarding lab values and pre and post-op visit proved challenging. As you can see here, there were only about 1,000 procedures reported. And the hospitals reported that these are not always in a discrete field, and sometimes the lab value or labs are done outside of the hospital, so they're not in the system. Also, surgical approach was an optional variable, and again, it was not in a discrete field. This would be probably found in the operative report, and consequently, it would have to be parsed from free text. So these are the patient demographics that we were trying to capture in level two, and as you can see, that they were able to report all of them, all the ends are close to the ends for the hip and knee, except for ethnicity, which is not very well documented in medical records. Additional procedural information, such as procedure duration, was not consistently reported. However, participant start and end time was better reported for both hip and knee, and the mean time was an hour and 30 minutes. In regards to length of stay, it was not well reported again. Again, it was a discrete field issue and would need to be calculated on admission and discharge date. But we did want to mention that with this new level two data, for example, the mean length of stay for hip was 2.4 days, and it had an outlier of 10 days. With level two, we can do a more in-depth analysis. And we looked at that 10-day patient, and it was a male, 86 years old, BMI 20, ASA score 44, hypertension, lung disease, chronic heart failure, so you could expect that he would have some bad outcomes. When it came to the hip or the knees, which was 2.5 days, we had an outlier of 13 days. But interestingly, there was two patients. One was a male, 56, BMI 28, ASA score 2, and only had hypertension. So there could be something else going on. So this type of in-depth analysis will allow us to assess if these outcomes are due to hospital, surgeon, or just patient-related issues. Also, when it came to comorbidities, all 20 hospitals were able to submit at least some comorbidity data. As you can see, the ends were quite high. However, we did not have consistent reporting on the coronary artery disease, obesity, and peripheral artery disease. And it was interesting with the obesity that was not reported well, suggesting ICD-9 obesity codes are not well documented in patient medical records. However, we do collect height and weight, so we'll be able to do our own BMI. And post-op complications, data capture was inconsistent, mainly due to timing of the pilot data submission. That is, that the hospital provided retrospective data that could report complications easier than if someone submitted real-time data. Only 14 hospitals submitted ICD-9 codes for complications. So in conclusion, in regards to lab values, prophylaxis, and beta blockers, discrete fields and EMRs and data capture, it's not always in the system. For comorbidities and complications, we will need to include more diagnosis codes, though ICD-10 will address this issue. Timing of capture of post-op complication was a challenge, and in that regard, many hospitals were only reporting data on duration of stay for total joint replacement and not following the patient after discharge. And in the near future, this will be critical to capture now that the bundle payment is being implemented by CMS. The model is focused on full episode of care from pre-op to post-acute care, promoting all providers to work in collaboration. And the full episode will continue 90 days following hospital discharge. So we just want to say the challenges for national data capture. Federal initiatives are seeking to utilize health registries as a mechanism to promote promote performance-based healthcare. Hence, a consensus is needed to on how registries fit into this model, especially when it comes to PQRS. In 2019, that will become part of the MIPS, merit-based incentive system. So as of now, we don't know, it's unclear how we will be utilized. Also, when it comes to HIPAA compliance, current regulations do not address issues facing registries for quality reporting and data capture that are not research-driven. For instance, current policies are unclear if or when patients need to be consented for registries that report back only quality metrics to the hospital. So clearly defined regulations are needed for registries so that data captured is not hindered for quality initiatives. Thank you.
Let's have another round of applause, thanking all our presenters. If you ladies can come up. At this time, we'll take your questions. If you have questions on any of the presentations, I know it's been a while since you've been through all of them, but we'll take your questions now. Go ahead.
I have a question for the American Registry.
Okay.
No, we set up business associate agreements with data use on it and also a participation agreement where we outline how we will use the data. Since we are setting up a BAA with them and only reporting quality metrics back, we fall under their kind of like a vendor they're using to develop metrics for them. So since we're only doing quality initiatives, we can kind of get around that. Hospitals have the choice, though, if they want to consent. So when we are working with large medical, you know, systems, a lot of times they have a pretty robust research group, and they all just kind of include the registry as another arm to that, like, consent form. So it's always something we constantly need to be keeping up on. You know, there's a lot of new things discussing how consenting and maybe stricter in the near future. So those things could change.
Thank you.
On that question, not from the perspective of HIPAA, but from the perspective of how you enroll hospitals into the registry, the challenges with that, and how large you hope to expand the sample of hospitals across the United States.
So the question was, how do you involve hospitals in the registries, and how do you expand on that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there's about 3,000 hospitals that do total joints, and so our goal is 90%. One of the things back is that we have a subscription that they can have on-demand access to their data, so we kind of become a nice repository. A lot of times hospitals have a lot of this data in different systems, the operative and the EHR and the service line. So, and when they submit it to us, they can easily access the system, see their quality metrics, and then we have national benchmarks for the future that they can look at. A lot of, you know, at the beginning when we were starting, it was very difficult for them to envision this, but I think a lot of like CMS and reimbursement, they're just really driving people to want to participate in the registry.